Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Young lady right up front asked me if I was ready. I told her I brought the big book. In case I get stuck, I can always read that. I also was sharing with Rick, who invited me to come down here, that I had stuck in my book. It's full of notes and things. I'm not very orderly. I have the map to Riverside, just in case. I spoke there last Sunday morning, and we were kidding a little bit, and I said, I wrote a few things down while they were doing the traditions and so on, just in case. You always have that feeling about going blank. But So I wrote down a few things for Riverside, and I never got around to them, so in the interest of whatever. I want to say you really have a very warm and friendly group. A lot of people spoke to both me and my wife, Francie, who's here in the front row there. She insisted that seeing I traveled all this way, that if I wasn't going to wear my coat, that I at least button down my collar. And Rick seconded that motion. And so I like to warn people that even though this is a speaker meeting, this is also a participation meeting, because most standard speaker meetings have a nice orderly progression to them, usually chronological, and it's made up in three parts. You could have three Roman numerals, like 1, 2, 3, and one is like what it was like, and that can be from, you know, where you were born and all that good stuff. And then what happened is usually the progression of the disease of alcoholism to a point where you're willing to do something, some calamitous event. And then mostly the Roman numeral 3 is like what it's like now, and that consists of saying, and I, ta-da, I worked the steps, and look how nice I turned out. So I've covered the whole gamut already. And so what I usually do is I start in the middle somewhere and work both ways, but I want you to have those three numbered boxes so that you'll know where to put things. And the reason it may be necessary, I probably won't get around to it, but some of my sober log in the first, 6 or 7 years sounded like other people's drunk logs. I had the marshal after me and my wife going to the door and me hiding in the closet, and that sounds like most drunk logs, but mine was simply a business failure, and they were trying to catch up with me before I went into bankruptcy. See, just getting sober, in case you're having any difficulty in the job area or the business area, just getting sober doesn't ensure that you know how to do business. And the failure didn't necessarily occur because I'm an alcoholic, but I was undercapitalized, you know. and didn't know what I was doing. And my wife always thought I was in business with a crook. He really did. He ripped off almost everybody. I was in television production thing at that time. We were doing sports shows, speedboat races up there right where Marina Del Rey is now. And my friend, I guess I can say his name. He's not alcoholic. I think he's either back in New York and or dead. So, but he got around to screwing over almost everybody. But seeing we never made any money, he never got around to me. Geez, I could hear him all the way back there. So I was sober about 7 or 8 years at that time. And that was a horrendous time. And I have been through a lot of things. And I studied writing and a few semesters of journalism, and they have a journalistic approach. And one of the things that the journalistic approach that they used to have before television took over was that things were written in a pyramid form. Supposedly the most important thing was told first, and then you went on down and maybe even to the next page until, you know, depending on if the newspaper had some ads, that's where you stopped, down in the details. So I always like to tell, say a few things just in case, you know, the big one occurs and we have to run out of here, that you get the message, especially those people who stood up as newcomers or are recently graduates from some hospital programs or just new to the program. And of course, it's real simplistic. And I am what they call in my part of the world a meeting freak. I go to a lot of meetings. I've gone through periods where I slowed down a little, but there's been very few times in my life where I didn't go to 2 meetings a week. Mostly early on it was more, and then later on it's more. Things have just worked out for me, and I know down here in San Diego, I came down to the Southern California Conference. I think it was 3 years ago. It wasn't last year, so would it have been 3 years ago? Yeah. Over here on 2 years ago. Okay. I don't know if that was a V for victory or 2 years. Somebody gave me the high sign there. But I always have a marvelous time. Francie and I have spent some time down here. See, I've had a lot of nifty, sober times, and some of them in San Diego, El Cajon. And as a matter of fact, my life now, I have a bunch of what I call sub cliches. You know, we have the standard ones. And so, one of mine, incidentally, and I understand they have a group of that name, and I don't think I'll get around to that, is screw guilt. I understand there's a group down this general direction called the Screw Guilt Group, and I got on a kick of that for a couple of years after I saw some of my friends that could not free themselves of guilt, and one of them wound up getting drunk and dying. And that's a subject for some other meeting, probably. But one of my, I like the cliche show up, or the sub cliche show up. And some people say suit up and show up. But if you're a nudist, you don't have to do that. See, and the reason I like to stress that, and this applies to newcomers and old-timers all alike, and I am an old-timer. See, I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to stay in 1949. So I've been sober for 39 years. See, that's the journalistic style I'm giving you. You know, if you watch the TV news now, it's news by suspense and surprise. And if you watch for the whole half hour, they'll tell you some important news. Media is not my favorite thing. Maybe because I failed in the media, so to speak. Could be. So I've told you a little bit about the fact that I'm sober, and I was 27 when I first knocked on the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, or got washed up on the shore or whatever. And that happened up in Inglewood, California. Some of you are familiar with Inglewood. And I called from a bar in Inglewood, one of those early morning opening bars. But I hadn't drank in the mornings that long, because my whole drinking career wasn't long as they seemed to me to be at that time. I drank for about 13, maybe 13 and a half years. And my drinking had not been working. See, the disease of alcoholism had progressed in me rather rapidly, at least rapidly for that time of the world. And it had not really been working for me for about 3 years. I really like to stress that. See, if there are newcomers or tire kickers here, or tire kickers. Somebody asked me the other day, what do you mean by tire kickers? I couldn't believe, because I come from Detroit, see, originally. And that's a term in the used car business. You know, guys come in and there's no rhyme or reason to why you should kick a tire. I guess maybe to see if the tire will fall off, but that's for people who are just trying things out. They come in the used car lot and walk around and kick tires. And so if you're a tire kicker in Alcoholics Anonymous, see, and there are a lot. And in a certain sense, I didn't intend it that way when I called Alcoholics Anonymous. When I called Alcoholics Anonymous from that bar in Inglewood one morning, when I went through a routine that I had gotten into only maybe a year or so earlier, and some drunks learned this, one of these secrets real early. the idea of the morning drink, getting your stuff together with by having a few snorts in the morning. And I would go into this really bad smelling bar there. It's right. It's actually on the curve between Westchester and Inglewood. And I had come out here to go to school under the GI Bill. That had been recommended by a shrink that I went to, because I'd been on a lock ward about 9 months before that, back in Detroit, or actually Dearborn, Michigan, just outside Detroit. And the shrink there, when he said, you know, he was a real full-blown type shrink, you know, just like you'd cast in the movies. He had a beard and a meerschaum pipe, and his chair looked like a throne, you know, and you went in there to kneel before him and tell him your things here. And so he asked me, you know, well, tell me, young man, what do you do? And my answer was, I drink. See, I hadn't done anything for well over a year. A group of circumstances came together at that time. My mother had died and left a couple of pieces of property, one to me and one to my sister. And I had sold mine, and like some of the Vietnam War folks now. See, I had been seriously injured. I was in a plane crash in World War II in which all the rest of the crew, the other four members of the crew, were killed. And I had wound up being hospitalized in dear old Battle Creek, Michigan, Percy Jones Hospital. I always say these things because I run into people who have had some of these experiences. And they might not identify my drinking, but they identify in a real important way with the bars I drank in. So I drank and I recovered from my injuries in Battle Creek, Michigan, where they make Kellogg's cornflakes. And right down the road is Kalamazoo. Anyway, I had been on the lock ward in the military hospital too. See, and what happened then was, after I had been recovering from my injuries for about a year, they would give me passes to go out, and it would turn out that I wouldn't come back. And so the commanding officer of that hotel, of the hospital, wound up having me locked up on the net ward there. And that was real hard on my ego, as you can imagine. See, I was just entering what I call terminal alcoholism. And see, I know there are a lot of fairly young people here, and possibly they'll identify with me. There's a lot of people coming in their teens now. See, I like to stress to you, and this, some of these things that I say are my opinion, but it's really based, as you can imagine, on I've been very interested in alcoholism as a thing and a disease, and I've heard literally thousands of stories. And this idea of terminal alcoholism is really important. See, if you drank like I drink, see, drink, in my opinion, see, on balance, even given the years of drinking was marvelous. See, drinking was my first romance. Sorry about that, Francie. See, it did all these wonderful things. And the book talks about that. See, it makes us, in varying degrees, it makes us feel better or more powerful or more confident, and takes away these fears that seem to be, I won't say necessarily unique to alcoholics as a group, but they seem, when I get to know people and have gone through fifth steps with other people, see, and they go back many times into their childhood like it did in mine, they seem to be more severe than non-alcoholics. And as a result, what I believe, see, remember I'm saying this, I believe that I got much more out of booze. See, when I was sitting as a teenager, sitting in a bar in the Brass Rail in downtown Detroit, drinking a shot and a beer. See, and I had a friend of mine from work sitting right next to me. I always thought that the same thing was happening to him that was happening to me. And it isn't. And it wasn't. See, I like to really stress that for the new people. See, that what happens, you know, it's the old Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I think, what was that? Stevenson wrote that? See, it's interesting that Dr. Jekyll drank the potion. You know, I'm sure you've seen one of the movies. And that sort of happened to me. Only the first guy that emerged was real nice. There's these funny cliches they have out in the street. And some of the, we used to have some like, let's get drunk and be somebody. See, one of the terms, it seemed to be more from the eastern part of the United States, I'd heard it back there, is, you know, there's all these terminologies for getting drunk, you know, getting smashed, and getting polluted. One of the ones that I liked was getting organized. Yeah. See, somehow, when I had a few drinks, see, I knew what my primary purpose was. See, it was to get another drink and then possibly do something else, you know, chase a girl or have some fun, drive real fast or, you know, ski behind automobiles or dive off high swimming pool towers. See, there was always, but it really did. It got, and I knew how to do things. See, and that persisted for quite a while. As a matter of fact, before I got out of high school, I had a job. And what I like to say about that, a lot of these things that I say about my drinking, see, are in retrospect based on a written fourth and fifth step. See, a written fourth step and sharing that. See, and I can't stress more, see, how important that is. A written. I think pretty well, especially with the advent of many, many hospital programs, that the old ideas that people used to lurk behind, of not writing. If I'm sponsoring somebody and they are not willing to write a fourth step, I tell them, please don't try to remember anything unless you have a pencil in your hand and a pad to write it on. I really mean that. Remember, this is my opinion. It's very dangerous to you to lay in bed and speculate on your past. See, if you're about to consider some of the events of your past, have a pencil and paper and put them down. Otherwise, just two or three real tragic ones can plunge you into that guilt again that many of us have. And when the next step after guilt is to drink to get rid of it. You know, see, one of the things is, you know, a statement, I'm not sure it's a cliche, that they say around AA is, you know, you can't scare an alcoholic. Well, that's not true. We know that. The only trouble is if you try to scare an alcoholic, you know, about telling them that if they continue drinking like they are, you know, please don't take the kid. They continue, their brain is going to explode inside their scalp, you know. And see, from doctors I know, that's possible. But if you scare an alcoholic bad enough and he doesn't have any program, the only place he knows to go is to drink. See, if you threaten him with loss of his job if he drinks anymore, you put the fear of the job loss in his mind, and the only thing he knows to do is drink. See, that's been my experience. It very seldom, over any length of time, I don't think you can really scare an alcoholic who's really not ready to do something, see, into doing that. Well, let's see. I've had some things in box 3, 2, and 1 in on there, I guess. Just to make sure I get something in box 1. I like to share this, and it was one of these things that I talk about. You press things down. I don't like to get too psychological, although I've been to psychologists a couple of times on my own, and Francie and I, who've been married for 37 years, have been to marriage counselors just in the last 5 or 6 years. See, our life changed. Our kids grew up and left, see? And then, worse still, I retired. I always like to say early retirement. But I did. I retired about a year and a half early. And see, that ties in with this show up. See, and I like to have a little joke about that. See, I like to beat the system out there. See, they have their principles. They have their principles, and we have ours. And the trick is to learn these principles in here and gain confidence over some period of indoctrination so that you know, see, I might tell them to you, or your sponsor might tell them, or you might hear people like me speaking and all that. See, that you know on your own that these spiritual principles will work and will win. See, I can't guarantee you they'll win if your motto is the guy who dies with the most toys wins. See, somehow, I don't think there really are very many alcoholics who get stuck with that very long. See, once in a while, if you want to show all the people, you know, if you get sober for you, I'm going to show mom and dad and the girl I used to go with, and that, you know, what a powerful person I really am now that I'm sober. But see, the idea, we get this chance to attend these one-room schoolrooms. See, my mother went to a one-room school. See, and they had the first 8 grades. It was out in the country. They had all 8 grades in together. And see, so when I'm talking to you, see, I'm talking with people who have less than 30 days, maybe a day or two, and I don't know. See, maybe I have, with 39 years, maybe I had the most time of sobriety, most days piled up. See, but we're all in there together. The more important thing is having done the steps. See, and so I'm talking to people who haven't done any steps, and I'm talking to people who have done the steps many times. See, so I don't know who for sure I'm talking to. But see, I can just lay these things out there, and hopefully you can hook on wherever you were. See, if you're young, I want you to know, see, I got here young. I knocked on the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous at 27. And what I believe about that, most of the people that I met when I first showed up, and I think it contributed, to being necessary for me to go back out and try it again, was there was a lot of stuff that, see, of the 25-year drinker and how many fifths they drank every day and how many wives they'd had and dozens of jobs. And see, I'd only had a few jobs, and I'd never really got fired from one. They saved my job for me, you know, when wars were popular back in World War II. They saved my job for me for 5 years. And when I got out, see, my drinking was in full flower, and I lost that job in 5 months. And they didn't fire me. They challenged it, though. I showed up drunk one afternoon in the office, and the branch manager in this bank showed up, unfortunately, the same time. And he wanted to talk to me about it, and I could tell that he was challenging my drinking. And see, my mother had died, and I had this pot of dough. And it's like, screw that. I didn't want to work in a bank anyway. See, so he wanted to see me the next day. And I was in the automobile finance department of the bank, and he wanted to meet me out at a dealer's place away from the office so we could have a little heart-to-heart. But I knew what it was all about. So he encouraged me to go home, and I didn't go home. You know where I went. Went to the nearest bar, started drinking until they closed up, and then had some more and slept in my car. And then I pulled up in front of that dealership, and it was a used car, a big used car dealer there in Ypsilanti, Michigan. where Willow Run used to be. It was a place almost like this. And the desk, you know how these car dealerships are, they have a window in the office. And a bunch of cars parked in front. And I pulled up in front of this, and of course I was in horrible shape. And I'm sure I smelled bad. I'd slept in my trench coat, probably wet in my pants. and was real. And so he waved me in. And I shook my head, and I rolled down the window, and I waved him out. And he started walking out between those cars, and I just took the briefcase that I'd stuffed everything that belonged to me out the window and drove off. See, and I didn't do anything significant for the next 15 months but drink. And I like to really share this, especially maybe with people who aren't too long-termers. See, Bill used the expression, the first nip of the ringer. See, I've examined Bill Wilson, one of our co-founders, life story real close. As a matter of fact, if people have read, I would recommend again that you read the big book. See, and then the 12 and 12, wherein Bill tries to explain what he meant in the first place. And then there's a few others, you know, including the good old timers. See, and then the most recent one that came out at the time of the international convention back in Montreal that my wife and I went to, see, with like 50,000 drunks in town. And it's real impressive. Francie was telling me, she's an active Al-Anon now. But I'll have to say, she looked around, she didn't see any more Al-Anons here. I don't know whether her eyes aren't that good anyway. But I'll have to tell you, see, now I'm jumping around again. We got married in 1951. Al-Anon didn't hit the West Coast till about 53 or 54. Okay? As a matter of fact, the 12 and 12 wasn't written then. So, when Al-Anon came out here, see, our courtship involved, going to AA meetings. See, that's a cheap date, by the way. No, it was curiosity. See, I had some literature and some stuff from the LA Central office, on the seat, and she asked me, I'd taken her here and there for her brother. I was showing this young lady around town. She was visiting from Emporia, Kansas, and she sort of blew in here and met me, the wizard. She thought everybody was like Macy. And so she asked me a few questions when she found out I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous because she had a cousin back in Emporia who used to have to drive 75 miles, or his wife had to drive him because he'd lost his driver's license. Every week he had to drive, there wasn't any meetings in Emporia, had to drive to Wichita and back. His wife drove him, and she was mystified about what he was doing. And of course, like the whole town would be in Emporia, Kansas. So I took her to, I started explaining, and then it dawned on me, and I suggest this to you too. See, if you have people that you believe are really interested in finding out what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, for God's sakes, bring them to an open meeting. See, they can pick up, between what's said and the fun and the laughter and the people that are here. See, most people still are rather surprised that there aren't more brown paper bags. I left mine in the car. See, so that's what I recommend. And so anyway, one of our little inside jokes is Francie didn't marry me. See, she was absolutely fascinated with this program and the people on it. And somehow, see, they liked her too. And see, I had to, you know, after this period of drinking, see, I drank through my teenage years. And I know there are a lot of other people nowadays, young people coming in who did the same thing. And what the world or the society calls those is the formative years. See, but I started drinking 13 or 14, and then I drank till 27, actually till 28. And so I didn't do any formative at all. And this is something that applies to all of you, old or young. See, what I basically, and there's a few little minor exceptions, when you wind up sober, what you find you're going to have to do is go back at least to the point in your life where you started drinking alcoholically. See, and that's hard. See, it was even hard on me when I was 28 years old to go back. See, I really didn't know how to dance. You're not allowed to say anything there, Francie. See, I didn't know how to dance, but I had danced just fine. I was Fred Astaire number two when I had just the right amount of booze in me. I'd like to in stroking out this picture a little bit. See, I used to go to bars where you could meet girls, and there's usually dancing going on there. And I'd show up with some of my buddies, especially when I was still in the service there in Kalamazoo, girl, Kalamazoo. We'd go down the road to meet the girl in Kalamazoo. And they had a nifty nightclub there. But see, my alcoholism was entering the terminal phase. And what I experienced, and I want to share this with you so you can chart your own disease. See, again, if you're still sort of tire kicking a little bit. See, what would happen to me is many times, see, I knew if I had a few drinks, you know, usually about three doubles was a good starting place for coming to life. But what would happen toward the end is somehow I'd miss that good period in there and never get around to dancing. See, booze was not, this is a simple, lightweight example. But see, there were times early on when I could have two or three drinks. And the booze was working for me. And I'd call somebody up and make a business deal or an appointment or explain something in detail to them over the phone, when I had about three drinks before my tongue got too thick. I knew about that. See, and I was bright and funny and all that nifty stuff over the phone. And then I'd show up the next day, sober. See, this is early on. And have them sign the contract. See, and they said something about how dull I seemed. I said, yeah, I have a bad headache or something. But toward the end, toward the end, and I really like to stress this a lot. See, and this is something, it's from one of the stories in the book that it talks about your drinking machinery breaking down. And see, me and another guy started kidding around about that and relating it to the progression of the disease of alcoholism. See, and what we came up with was that, see, if your drinker is broke, see, it can never be put together. And no one, no priest, see, no rabbi, no guru up on the mountain over in India, see, no shrink at all, can restore, see, put the parts back so you can drink again. See, you can get fixed up, and there's other places I guess you can get fixed up. AA is the most successful and seems to me to be the most pleasant. But there's no one, and if anybody tells you, see, that they're going to tune up your mind and you'll be able to drink again, they're lying to you. And please don't waste any time with that. See, if anything of my total sobriety means anything, as I said, amongst the places that some people I find, number one, don't avail themselves of the Grapevine, that monthly magazine. See, if you're not buying it or subscribing to it, get a hold of a few. And then if you have to take a trip sometime and you're not sure about where the meetings are, the corny thing that they say, a lot of things that are said around AA are corny. And they say, hey, you know, the Grapevine is a meeting in your pocket. See, there's a whole series of pitches, well-selected pitches, very powerful pitches. I've been in Mexico a couple of times, and I'll just tell you, I was damn glad, we're out in the Tule sort of, I was damn glad to have the Grapevine with me. And a secondary interesting thing about the Grapevine to me is in the back, on the gray pages, I don't know how they came into that practice, they talk about the research and what's going on in the field of alcoholism and the law as it applies to alcoholism and medical discoveries, you know, things like endorphins and stuff as they apply to alcoholics and other people. See, I think that's very fascinating. See, if I'm an alcoholic and have this deadly disease, see, it's very important for me to know everything I possibly can know about it. See, and as I told you, now that I'm retired, I probably spend about 20 hours a week in AA or AA-related stuff. I'm involved with a couple of recovery houses and things like that. See, and why? Is that a great sacrifice? No, I love it. I get the same general effect out of being with a bunch of alcoholics, people that I never saw before, you. See, I care about you. And if you knew me a little better, maybe by the time I get to the end of this, if I can get back on me 1, 2, 3, you'll know a little bit about me. See, and you'll care about me. And that's the way AA is. See, and that's a marvelous thing in this world. See, if you're new and you're kind of depressed about the fact that your drinker is broken, see, well, welcome to the club. You know, there's all these cliches about the biggest fellowship in the world that nobody wanted to join. See, and that turns out to be, but the trick is, and again, I think from people I've met, somehow the hospitals seem to be able to speed this process up a little bit. They get to see that how small the stigma is now amongst anybody in the whole world, anywhere all over the world. You know, the World Health Organization, not just the United States, I'm sure you know American Medical Association recognizes alcoholism as a disease. See, the World Health Organization, there's something like, there was a discussion the other day on TV, and this guy who was an authority said that throughout the educated world, the members of the United Nations, something like 78% of all the people there knew, and by their charters and so on, recognize alcoholism as a disease. See, so I hope if you're new and you're thinking, you know, the worst has happened to me, see, you might think, well, that's easy for you to say. But what I want to assure you is if you can hit whatever bottom you have to hit, and you have to hit one. See, it doesn't have to be like mine. See, and it doesn't have to be like anybody's. It's like a death. See, like I told you, the idea that I'll never be able to drink again, my God. See, because I knew there, I absolutely know there were circumstances, and as much as we joke about it, I assure you, if you're talking with newcomers, somebody will approach you between now and Labor Day and say, well, I can make it now, but see, my son's going to graduate next June, and I can't possibly get through his graduation. See, somehow this idea of living a day at a time is something that's one of the hardest things to get a hold of. See, but if you can somehow get a hold of the spiritual principles of this program through the steps, see, through the steps, see, and in whatever reason you're telling yourself to stall, don't stall. See, especially if the fog has lifted, see, I'd really encourage you to make the hardest run that you can at starting on a fourth step. See, after I went back out, and I was only, I like to say this too. See, I don't recommend it for anybody. And I go on a regular basis to this detox center. It's called the Way Back In, and they've recently changed their policy. But for 10 years, or 11 years, I guess it is, their arrangement was, and they had 28 people in there, and you could only, the detox center, you could only stay there for 7 days. And when I was working at Northrop, right around the corner, I used to go there. I used to go to that place for 3 meetings. Now it's kind of far away, so I go up for their Sunday meeting almost every week. And so in the course of those 11 years, they've had nearly 14,000 people through there, most of whom have already been to Alcoholics Anonymous. Over 90% of them have already been to Alcoholics Anonymous, and a few will say it doesn't work. Most of them will acknowledge they didn't work the steps. And see, this idea of all these percentages, I don't like to get into percentages. You know, the Marine Corps, you know, look to the left and look to the right. You know, 6 months from now, the men, those guys will be gone. The hell with that. See, if you came to save your ass, see, you are a statistic of one. See, the book says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Now, the trick is there in there is, are you ready? See, have you experienced this terminal alcohol phase where, and some people get to it, some people do not pass go, and they go right to terminal alcoholism. See, a lady friend of mine only drank a total of 9 months, and she was just as much an alcoholic as an old friend of mine who drank for over 25 years. See, and I knew that because after you talk to alcoholics for a while, we have some sort of, we're not identical in pattern, but there's some sort of symmetry to the alcoholic mind. See, this craziness of the second step. And so please don't put any big time frames. I said that once before, and I'll say it once more. There isn't any time thing for this curve down into the pit. See, this lady went into the pit in 9 months. Unfortunately, see, this was back in the late 50s. A lot of people convinced her that she hadn't drank long enough to be an alcoholic. And she also tried the predecessor of Valium, I guess, called Miltown. And that built up just like Valium does. And in short order, she was drinking again. And once she got drinking, there was no doubt to her or anybody else that she was an alcoholic. See, I came around, as I said, I was 27 years old when I called AA from that bar. It was kind of funny. The guy that came and he met me outside the door. See, he had his principles. He would not pull us off the bar stool. I don't know if you heard that one. We don't pull them off the bar stools. Anyway, he came and he met me right out in front, and he helped me get my car going again and helped me get home. I was living just off campus there. I had been sleeping in my car and parking down a shady street where the street lights wouldn't shine on me so the cops wouldn't see me. And I think the lady that lived in this, it was a nice neighborhood there, didn't like the idea of somebody sleeping in a car in front of her house on a regular basis. So she'd let the air out of all my tires. You know, it's just a slight inconvenience when you're sick and shaky. You know. Of course, I didn't even know that when I called him. See, all I knew is that I'd put these drinks down, and it was a little routine. I usually had a couple of beers and threw them back up, and then I'd try something a little stronger when I felt it would stay there. And I got the harder stuff down, and nothing happened. See, I didn't feel like I had my stuff enough together. I wasn't organized well enough to go to class. See, that's what I was trying to do. Go to class under the GI Bill to have some structure. That was the last piece of structure I had left in my life. See, I was living in Los Angeles, and I had a break. See, and most of you won't get the break I had. What I believe is the people that make the program, they get a break somewhere along the line. Church people might call it grace. See, you get a freebie somewhere along. And mine didn't seem, excuse me, mine didn't seem like it was a break. What it was that, see, I had just arrived in Los Angeles on what was really a geographical, I didn't even know the term then, to transfer out to Loyola from University of Detroit. And so this morning when I called Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. Even in those prehistoric days, as my kids used to talk about to me, on the radio, they actually had TV, but this was on the radio, they had a public service announcement. And I'd heard, see, do you have a problem with drinking? And see, I was living at my sister and brother-in-law and mooching off of them. And of course, if that came on the radio, if I was standing up, I kept right on walking. And if I was sitting, I held up the newspaper till that damn announcement went off. See, because I wasn't ready to do anything about my drinking. See, and that's where we get into the real significant thing, I think, for recovery. See, I really like to encourage you, like I try to encourage these guys, who some of them get on this merry-go-round, and it's two or three times to the way back in. See, they're not quite ready. And what I believe about them, based on my own personal experience, and that's fundamentally what I have to share, is that there's apparently something still out there for them. See, I hear about people who've been on the program for a while and go back out, and they're gone for two or three years. See, I went out after 10 weeks, and booze knocked me right on my can in 4 hours. There was no fun in games. You know, booze used to give me power. See, lack of power, that's our dilemma when we have to stop using it. That's why we need a higher power. See, booze knocked me on my can. Now, it took me 14 days approximately. I'm not even sure what my sobriety date is. It took me 14 days to get back. See, and if you're there, and again, you're a tire kicker, and your alcoholic mind, which is out to kill you, and it will stay out to kill you forever. See, this is the baby you have to watch out for. See, and if it were popular to believe in devils anymore, it always attacks you, see, from your weakest place. And it still attacks me to this day. I had some wonky ideas this morning. As a matter of fact, I got so upset, it's like, boy, I really got my nerve going down to San Diego and talking the way I feel. See, but what I do now is I go to a morning meeting. Very simple. Lots of times I can't get my stuff together enough to do prayer and meditation in the morning. Spiritual exercises, to me, are just about like physical exercises, and I've never hung in there with them. You know, I do them while I'm taking the class. Ta-da. See, and so what I do when I get up in the morning, I almost every morning, I go to an AA meeting. My day's centered. See, I do get organized. AA organizes me. I'm a very disorganized person. See, and by the time I come out of there, everything is okay, and my wife is off to work. See, that's sort of an inside joke. See, all while I was working at dear old Northrop, Francie was taking care of the home front and raising our 4 children and so on, and doing good things like that, and helping out at the House of Hope, a women's recovery house. She was very involved, but she wasn't working in the marketplace. And so, of course, when I retired, having me around the house all day was more than she could handle. No, it was something I think that she really always wanted to do. So now 3 days a week she works at, where I'll put a plug in, Robinson's up there in the Del Amo Shopping Center. So stop up and see Francie. She'll steer you to the bargains there. So now I have the best of all possible worlds.
I've stopped working, and she started. See, she's my last chance for a twin-engine airplane. See, while I was in the service, and I told you I was in this plane crash, I was a navigator while I was in the service. I always wanted to be a pilot. And I went through classification center, and I had a minor eye problem. And in those days, see, I always get a kick out of the airline pilots stepping into the cabin with these bottle-top glasses these days. But at that time, they required you to have 20/20 vision uncorrected. And I couldn't pass that. I had a funny thing. My eyes did strange things. But enough to disqualify me. And so I like to share this with people, too. See, I don't know what your aspirations are as far as your career. A lot of people, we make a little joke about, I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. See, and some of them have gray hair like me. And I understand that. See, because that's what it's all about, is to find out what you want to do, what you want to do. See, not what you ought to do, what you want to do. See, and what you want to do turns out to be what you ought to do. See, like me being here at this meeting tonight, see, you're in the best of all possible worlds. See, it's just marvelous. But it takes a long time. And I do sponsor a lot of young guys. And I like to throw, I call these my Ann Landers handy hint part of my pitch. See, if you really don't know what it's all about, you've been sober for anywhere from a few months to a few years, and you don't like what you're doing, and you think you could do better or worse or more or what. See, I really strongly encourage you to do something that worked for me. See, and this is a sort of aside from AA. See, while I was on that lock ward, before I actually got to the program, the shrink brought in the Veterans Administration, and they gave me a big battery of tests, you know, 4 hours or so, 3 or 4 hours, many pages, of aptitude test. If you take, and a guy I'm sponsoring now, and he got the recent VA one, and I looked it over, and it looked better than the one I took. See, it matches what you want to do with your abilities. See, I'm real serious about that. People wander around, and I hate to be sort of, you know, one of these old timers say, oh, well, you want a job? Don't pray. Pick up the want ads, you know. But there is this practical side of doing stuff. See, and I really think that there's all kinds of advice, in California especially. There's all kinds. I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and my wife's from Emporia, Kansas. And some of the people back there have the idea that a God or a great hand just took the East Coast of the United States like a big rug and went, and then all the people that weren't attached to anything just slid out here. And they either joined a religion, a new one that they invented, or if they're alcoholic, they joined AA. See, I've been to meetings where it's a step study meeting kind of, and I go through the steps. I'm not going to do that. See, the book does that, and the 12 and 12 does that, and I hope they have step studies in your neighborhood where they'll take a whole hour on each step. And you get a lot of questions and answers, and there's a lot of really good questions about the steps. Let me encourage you to really look hard in the book. And my strong recommendation, because after I'd been around approaching 20 years, my friend Alec, who had 20 years, stressed to me the importance of the doctor's opinion. See, we were talking about the disease of alcoholism. The doctor's opinion. See, if you haven't read that, for God's sakes, and as I said, if you're a tire kicker and you're only thinking you're only going to drop in here, before you leave, beg, borrow, or steal a book and read the doctor's opinion and chapter 3, more about alcoholism. See, for God's sakes, do that. You have to know what we're dealing with. We're not dealing with fun and games. We're not dealing with immoral stuff. Although me and almost everybody I know got into a lot of shady stuff mixed in with our drinking. See, and I don't know whether it caused that. All I know is that after I went through the process of the steps, one of my friends doesn't like that term. He thinks of cheese, you know. But see, the process of the process of the steps, is an orderly process. And I usually encourage people not to do the steps out of order. Now, once in a while, if somebody's leaving town, I guess, and you owe them $5 and you haven't gotten to the ninth step, it's okay to slip in the five. But see, I made some amends, some monetary amends before I was up there, and it didn't work. It backfired even. My old army buddy that had covered a bad check for me, see, and I thought we were going to renew our friendship and all that. And it must have been something I said in the letter. It was ego. See, John, you're going to get your dough back. See, and if you, like I, try to make your amends from that point of view, they're going to go right down the toilet. See, somehow this is a spiritual program. And if you violate spiritual principles, it won't work. And I have to say, see, that when you're coming here, for me, it took me a year, somewhere between a year and 15 months, to accept the fact that my old pal Booze was not out of town. It was dead. It was never going to come back. See, I could do push-ups. See, I could go back to my church and receive Holy Communion and do all these nifty things. And, you know, I think the guru thing is a joke because I really think probably I never would have had a drinking problem if I had had the guru environment, you know. You sit on a pillow up there in that rarefied atmosphere and somebody clothes you and feeds you. If you bring one of those turkeys down and put them on a freeway, see, they'd be showing up in AA right away. See, we live in a stressful society. See, but I've been around long enough now on this program. See, that when I sort of glance around here, I see this cross-section of ages. And see, my specific, I'm playing around with a couple of things. I was trained to write motion picture and television stuff. And I did that for a while and wasn't very successful in that. I couldn't support my family on that. I got a TV script that I want to do. And I got a funny book I want to do about retirement. And I haven't decided whether to focus on just AA or I don't know whether non-alcoholics would get any of the jokes or not. I try them out on Francie and she smiles usually. But see, I have some things I like to do, but I like to tell you this and you can accept it or not. See, when the roll is called up yonder, and it might be called when you're 25 or 30 or 35 or 45 or what, it's not necessarily when you're my age or older. See, what's really going to count, see, if you're laying there and you know you're going to die, is like, well, see, do you know who you are and have you done what is appropriate for you to do? And if you do nothing else except get sober and take a fourth and fifth step, see, you will have advantage over almost everybody out there. Two-thirds of the people out there don't do that. I know that. See, I wound up, I thought it was a joke, my life's unmanageable, I wound up as a manager at Darrow Northup. They're still investigating there, of course. But see, I had one member of AA happen to be in my group of 15 there, but the rest of the people, they had all these problems, they had kids on dope. See, they had illness, they had divorce, they had everything you can think of, and they had no spiritual principles in their lives. See, most of those people, honest to God, are going to jump in the grave, and they're never going to know why they were on the planet. See, if your alcoholism, like mine, simply got you here to find out who the hell you were before they call the roll up yonder, you're a success. See, I love to go to alcoholic funerals where people got sober and stayed sober. And again, I'm kind of contrary. If you don't believe that, ask my wife. It's hard to believe that a nice guy like me would be contrary. But see, I like to go to AA funerals and see people that made it all the way. And many, 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 many of my friends, I haven't any idea what percentage. I don't care what percentage. I've known dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of people. They got sober on this program, sometimes from the get-go, sometimes after floundering around for a while, and stayed sober the rest of their lives. And when they got a hold of these principles and put them into practice in their life through doing the steps. That's something I get nervous when they're not on the wall. See, at the way back in, I've actually had people say that they came to AA for up to a year, and they really had no, they heard them reading something, but they never saw any relationship between the steps and their lives. Never saw any real relationship. What has that got to do with drinking? Well, that's for, that, if you're new, and especially if you're a tire kicker, that's for you to find out. See, because it is. It's the path. See, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And the path is laid out there in those 12 steps. And if you can do that, see, and after step 9, it says before we're halfway through, and we like to have a little, where, do they mean halfway through step 9, or do they mean halfway through the 9 steps? I don't know which. Doesn't matter. See, a lot of these things don't matter. Don't mount to a rat's ass, you know. just, see, but what I want to tell you is if you get to step 10, see, and then you start on the maintenance steps, hopefully on a daily basis of some sort, see, you will have a rich, full life. A rich, full life. See, it's worth doing what you have to do for that first period of time, whatever the indoctrination period is, you know. If you went into the military, you had to go through boot camp or whatever the hell, the basic training stuff, and it was very unpleasant. Almost everything that you start up is very unpleasant. It's really hard to get, if you, again, I just assume you have to be like me, to get past these things sober. See, if you can't dance sober, what do you do? See, it's like, I went left my first dance driving home, it's like, I flew into a rage. And I offer this to you if you're fairly new. You will hear yourself say something like these words. As a script writer, I'll put them in your mouth or your head. If this is the way sobriety's going to be, they can have it. The trouble is, buddy, there ain't no they. It's just you. See, we try. It says even in that we beg of you to be fearless and thorough. We encourage you. See, but if you don't want it, they have a sign up at the club I go to, and it's carved out of wood and says, we care. But after some period of time, if you indicate, maybe you're just too crazy, if you indicate you don't care, there's no possibility of us caring. I want to say one other strong personal opinion, but it's based on a lot of living experience. And see, every once in a while people have these ideas, and you're entitled to any opinion you want, about going to psychologists or psychiatrists. And I'm not going to thumb through my book now. I can't remember page numbers where they're down. The book recommends that you do if you have problems. It tells to look at all kinds of practitioners. Now, I've had both good and bad. The best ones, of course, are people, in my opinion, who are also alcoholic. See, I tried to take my original fifth step with a priest, and it didn't work. He thought I was there to be forgiven. See, and I wasn't there to be forgiven. See, but that was... And then I went back and looked in the book, and sure enough, I missed something it said in there. It says, with an understanding person. And the best chance of an understanding person is another person on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous who's already at least done the fourth and fifth step. Hopefully he's done them all. See, hopefully he's done them all. It sounds kind of funny, but be sure, honest to God, if you wander in here and you get going on these things in the first few months and you pick somebody for a sponsor, ask them. Ask them. Somehow there are people that hang out in AA, you know, I have a rather poor opinion. They're usually, they're boring as hell. See, you get into the excitement of AA when you do the steps. See, when you get to find out who you are, God darn it, that's exciting. See, and when you go to make those amends, see, that's challenging and scary, and it's something hard to do, and it's interesting and it's fun. See, and when you pass through these things, see, you will have, like I have now, a rich, full life. See, and I can say that with my wife sitting there, and she's not going. She may not be nodding, but see, but we've had a rich, full life. We've had 4 children. They're all grown and all gone. See, they're all self-supporting through their own whatever, you know. See, I think that's really marvelous. See, we have a family where because I was sober, I had a lot of screaming matches around the house, throwing keys, slamming windows one time till they broke a window when I was sober over 5 years. Am I proud of that? No. See, but I have to tell you the truth, just like my friend Alex from Scotland. See, he taught me a lot of things. One of the things he used to say, because he was kind of a guru, he was Scotch. And I love to hear Scotch people talk. He could say, read the want ads, and I'd be impressed, you know. So when he talked something about AA, I could listen to him almost endlessly, see. But what he got carried away with, he was living at home with his wife and a teenage son, and something would be bothering him and upsetting him, and then he'd look at his watch and say, oh, it's time for my meeting. And his wife, good little wife, Annie, would say to him, if he was, slamming doors and doing whatever he was doing, she'd shout after him, Alex, don't forget to put on your AA face. See, try to live at home. Try to live at home. See again, Francie and I went to counseling because we had significant differences sometimes once the buffer of the kids were there. But if you will try to practice these principles in all your affairs, with the young people, with your romances, or whatever you want to call them, you know, relationships. I have an idea that the term relationships is going to pass away. We used to call them shack jobs in the old good old days. Yeah. But there are all kinds of relationships. Practice these principles. That's the game. That's the AA game. You know, like Monopoly. See, the AA game, to stay sober and have a rich, full life on this planet, better than most people out there, more interesting than others. And see, again, if you're like me, we need a lot of stimulation. See, I haven't been able to give up coffee with whatever in there. Don't tell Bob Earl, though. See, we're, many of us are, one term that's used is adrenaline junkies. See, I don't know. Back on the gray pages, there's been endless discussion about the adrenaline system of alcoholics. See, I don't know what the answer to that will be, but I know that every once in a while, see, the troubles that I bring on myself, see, throughout most of my sobriety, I was late everywhere. See, that always makes it exciting. See, if you have 100 miles to go and only 1 hour, see, and the freeway is loaded, man, that's exciting. Yeah. See, but all I have to do, see, with the help of my higher power, that's the point I want to make and then get off. See, there's a lot of comparisons, and especially if you've been in hospitals or you've been in treatment, and I've been in all of those. See, like, well, what's the difference between us and group therapy or psychological counseling stuff? There's some overlapping things. But in most cases, not all, in most cases, unless it's, say, it's a religious-sponsored kind of thing, see, there's no higher power. Somebody told me about going to a shrink's office, and they actually had the Serenity Prayer, and they just left the first word off. Isn't that funny? I don't know what the concept was. See, but what Alcoholics Anonymous says is when we find these defects, and it takes a long time to really find out what the defects are. See, the lying and cheating and stealing and hitting people, they pop up pretty damn fast. But see, there's all this about assertiveness training and all of this kind of stuff. It's like, and being honest and stuff. It'll take you, if you're like me, the rest of your life to find that balance in there. See, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, what they tell us to do is when you find out something that you're doing wrong, you with the help of your sponsor and whoever you're working with and talking about and writing about, you change that behavior and then your thinking will change. See, your local shrink at $100 a pop is going to tune up your brain and then your behavior is supposed to change. Well, maybe it will and maybe it won't. I don't know whether it will or not. But that's not AA's approach. It says change your behavior. When you find out you're doing these goofy things, do your very best to stop them. And the other part is where instead of doing push-ups or something, see, when you identify these things that you choose to get rid of, see, when you choose to get rid of them, what we do in here is we ask God, or if God upsets you, higher power, we ask a power greater than ourselves to remove them. And then sometimes these procedures and processes and stuff start happening. See, so if you get stumbled, if you get yourself caught in a box, you know, I can't imagine how, after hearing me for almost an hour now, how you could possibly ever be caught in another box. But if you do, see, remember that part of the thing. See, when we find him, we just don't say, well, what am I going to do? There's a precise thing to do. You identify what it is, and sometimes you may need professional help or sponsor help to identify what it is. See, and then you ask God to remove it. That's what you do. See, and that can be if it's a fear of somebody in your family who's sick, or somebody who can't seem to get a job, or somebody who's still drinking. See, that's what we do. And then there will be footwork. There will be footwork. See, but if you do, see, that's another little sub-cliche. See, if you want what I have, and I can't really summarize all the nifty things I have. I learned how to fly. See, as a pilot, when I was 54. How about that? Acrobatic, you know. Whew. How about that? That's why my wife's my last chance at a twin-engine airplane. Yeah. See, I don't know what your hope is.
Whatever legitimate hope, and they will change. You have a real chance of achieving them through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a higher power as you find them, and the principles that are embedded in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.